We're going to dig into the future of work and why it probably isn't what you think it is. Francisco Marin is the Palo Alto-based founder and CEO of Cognitive Talent Solutions, an award-winning AI-powered organizational network analysis leader serving Fortune 500 clients and a founding member of something which is really interesting. It's called the Network First Manifesto. And that's a global initiative advancing network-centric approaches to work governance and collaboration. Can you share your background and how you began working with Cognitive Talent Solutions and the Network First Manifesto, please?
Sure. So I come originally from Spain, from a city in the south called Cordoba. I used to work at IBM for 5 years, where I held different roles like Lysissima Black Belt, Bit Manager, and eventually Business Analytics Leader working with technologies like Watson. I left IBM to create my own company, Cognitive Talent Solutions, where I've been working for 7 years, about 5 of those years here in Palo Alto in California, in the organizational network analysis space. So in the context of working with CTS, I got to network with different people from the ONA community that were, we were concerned about how this technology, which we use to analyze and visualize informal interactions across an organization, can be used in a way that is not respectful with the rights of employees to have data privacy, right? And, you know, especially when analyzing email and calendar communication, we wanted to set some industry-wide standards in terms of, for example, well, let's agree not to analyze the email information at the individual level, or let's agree not to analyze the content of the communications. Let's agree on some standards on how we provide these insights. So it really all started as just industry, discussion with other people in the ONA community. But then it because of the context in which we are right now, where AI is automating everything, here in Silicon Valley, we see that new roles are being cut by half, and companies are shrinking, and we're going through multiple reorganizations. There is a lot of talk about, you know, artificial intelligence, artificial general intelligence. The conversation within the ONA community quickly evolved into something much wider, much more exciting, which is if we are entering an era where AI can automate virtually everything that we do, what is it that defines us as human? And the collective response that we had in that conversation is that what defines us as human is our ability to connect with each other, to experience human connection. And therefore, we should create frameworks, tools, and systems that amplify human connection and what we call collaborative freedom, and being understood as the ability to work on something we're passionate about with people that resonate with us, and having freedom of over our schedule. If you and me have worked as entrepreneurs or freelancers, right, then we have experienced that. But someone that has worked their whole life in a corporate environment might not have experienced that if they work at the wrong company. So, you know, this is something that becomes like even more important in the current context. And therefore, what we did is to, within that initial community, we crafted a manifesto with 8 principles, talking about social capital, networks, collaborative freedom. And then we started to basically explore different frameworks on how to make that a reality. The first framework that we explored was, can we map our areas of interest in our community, as well as, you know, our preferred project pairings, preferred work style, asynchronous or not, and are we willing to lead an initiative or not, right? And then feed that to an AI engine and have the AI actually configure work groups that can work together and deliver stuff in an effective and efficient way. That's what we call the 30-day impact challenge. So again, we mapped this information through Google Forms. At that point, the initiative was already about 500 members strong, with more than 300 companies represented. And all this within the first couple of months, by the way. So the traction has been really, really significant. But we mapped all that information, we fed that to an AI system, and the AI configured 8 groups of 8 people to work together for 30 days with very specific instructions on specific deliverables that need to be completed. So that was a disaster, basically. Like only half of the teams were able to deliver something. They were not assigned to the right topic. But what we saw very interesting in that first experience is that those teams where there was at least one person who was really passionate about the topic, which happened only in a couple of projects. One had to do with healthcare transformation and the other had to do with employee well-being. So when there was only one person who was passionate about it, that person took over 80% of the work and make the other people gravitate organically And we saw, oh, actually here, there is something interesting. Here, there is a spark that this setup is, but this doesn't happen often enough. So then based on those experiences from that first initiative, we moved to the current model that we are working with. And the model works in the following way. Any founding member that joins the community, which by the way is open to all and is non-commercial, there are no fees involved, no sponsors, no donations. So any founding member can submit a proposal on anything they want to work on, no restriction whatsoever. If that proposal gets 25 votes or more from the community, it gets ratified. And then that person can launch that project as part of the Slack workspace, along with any other founding members that want to join and support it. So already it's kind of like a different concept, right? It's not complete decentralization in terms of let's all come together here with an agenda and let's figure out what is it that we want to do. But is this person is very passionate about something and wants to work on it together with a community from the inception point. And that is working really, really well because we have about 8 different, again, projects, but all of them are having meetings on a regular basis. You've been part of one of them, the Network First Poetics, to give an example, right? Stanford graduate from literature from Palo Alto living in Portugal, who is launching this initiative to, you know, how to redefine and reinvent the nomenclature that we use to refer to everyday concepts like meetings, proposals, projects, workers, work itself. And it's something that when you feel that that founding member is passionate about it, cares about it, it's very easy to gravitate around that energy. And then like we're exploring how to do this at scale, how to do this in a way that projects can have a greater degree of materialization. But we got super cool projects about, again, Network First Poetics, Network First Workplace Design, exploring how interior design architecture can actually work in a Network First environment and redesigning an actual workspace. We have another project that has to do with generational mentoring. We have another one that has to do with actually organizing events as part of the community, or one that we just completed that I led myself about implementing an active organizational network analysis within the community, where we map the actual network of interactions within the community in a very interactive way. So the current work we're doing sits at the intersection of network analytics, blockchain technology, and artificial intelligence. But the core of it is amplifying human connection and collaborative freedom. Network analytics, because it started with the ONA community and we are already integrating some network analytics from an operational perspective. Blockchain, because we use blockchain technology to vote on the in a decentralized manner for the proposals with technologies like Privy or Snapshot. And AI, because now as well, through some of the initiatives, we are starting to explore, for example, okay, like can AI make interventions through AI agents to introduce new members to other people they want to meet, right?
It's a good idea.
But all that technology, always from the point of view of let's do something that feels authentic and it amplifies human connection and collaborative freedom. Yeah, so I've been having a lot of fun with that over the last 2 to 3 months, as you can see.
It's great. I mean, look, I literally just joined probably 3-4 weeks ago now, and the people that I've met just super, having some really good conversations with you as well. So when this comes to business and how businesses are changing, this is giving some ideas to me, most certainly, and hopefully some of the listeners, that it's like, actually, when you enter into business and you go to a business and you say, well, are your people motivated, right? Because it's about motivation, isn't it? This is about hacking motivation, using creativity to hack motivation, right? In my opinion, just from understanding a bit about it. And actually that's really exciting, because once you do that, then employee performance is much greater, right? When people own a concept, it's much, much greater. And that motivation and positivity, it rubs off, doesn't it, onto other people?
Yeah, this concept that we're talking about, human connection and collaborative freedom, can definitely be integrated in traditional centralized environments. It's just about reimagining each of the processes. For example, say we got an onboarding process, right? Traditional onboarding process looks in a way where you have to go through a lot of bureaucracy, and then, you know, you might be lucky or not lucky, depending on the person that is assigned to you, if any person at all, to show you the ropes. And you might go through some kind of like a centralized, generic onboarding session with some recording that doesn't feel personalized at all, right? But how about we redefine onboarding as social activation and, you know, leverage both, again, the existing human capital that you have in the organization in terms of people that are creating value for others, but also the social capital and technology in terms of, well, let's have a person join the organization and let's have AI identify who is the person that is best positioned to be the mentor or buddy of that person. But take into consideration not only the years of experience and the role of the person, but also how is that person perceived in the community? Is a person that is inspirational? Is a person that people go to them when they need personal or technical support? So you see, like, you already have the ways to measure if a person is influential or not, if he's perceived in a positive or negative way by their peers. And you can even automate or optimize those initial interactions just in the concept of onboarding right now to a point where you can reduce the time to productivity of a new employee by up to 40%. But at the end of the day, you know, we ask ourselves, why are employees not motivated? We need some basic questions like, first, are employees working on something they really care about? You know, second, are employees really free to choose at all the people they interact with? Or are we at least making it easier for them to interact people with where that they are more likely to have a good experience by interacting with them, you know? And third is like also the flexibility with the schedule, which I think is very important. You know, I mean, like, people love working on site and people love working remotely depending on the context, but do people have the ability to choose where they want to work from and when they want to work? Because that, you know, if we are not meeting those basic requirements, then we can ask ourselves why employees are not motivated, but, you know, we're not really being honest enough to have an honest conversation about what those root causes are, I think. Yeah.
I mean, we're at a very, very difficult time right now for employees within large businesses and small medium as well, really, because the people are being laid off, right? And whether they like it or not, like, you know, entire sections of middle management are just, they're here yesterday and they're gone today. Right.
Yeah.
And this is really, it's really worrying for a lot of people. I mean, I think from the way I see it, a lot of the junior employees are still there. Top management is still there. And AI is in the middle, which is a fascinating thing to think about. But it, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon what those people go and do afterwards, because a lot of those people are going to go and set up their own businesses, right? Or they're just going to retire. Yeah, because they're kind of at that point in their lives. So back to what you're doing over there at Cognitive Talent Solutions, how is that and the Network First Manifesto related? And how do they reinforce each other in practice? I know you've talked a bit about.
Yeah. For me, honestly, they are like both like two sides of the same coin. And by the way, like, again, in the Network First Manifesto, all of us have the same role. We're all founding members. So there's not established hierarchy. Right. And was with CTS, I'm the founder and CEO. So, but there is still, even with CTS, the one way that they're related is that CTS is in a way a ground where we can experiment with many of these concepts. For example, we do not have traditional employment contracts as CTS. We have a core team, mostly here in California, where almost every single member are angel investors. And they were with us either full time or part time. Sometimes on a commission basis, sometimes there are retainers involved, right? But it's like you're starting from people that have a lot of skin in the game and they want to be part of the adventure. Then we have a group of consultants, which are about 25 people. These are people that have their own consulting company. They introduce our own technology as part of their value proposition, sometimes exclusively, sometimes along with other products. And we meet on a weekly basis. And then we got ambassadors, both consultants and ambassadors are part of what we call the global extended team. And these ambassadors, they do not necessarily need to have previous experience with ONA, but they resonate with the initiative. And they sometimes help us by, you know, making introductions, writing articles, spreading the word about what we do. So it's a very, very decentralized space where anybody that feels an alignment with what we do can just join anytime and be part of the venture, right? So it's very different than a traditional centralized company where the goal is, I'm going to raise $10 million and I'm going to have 50 people working full time. And I have 12 months to demonstrate to my investors that I can make revenue. Otherwise, I'm fired from the company or I'm obligated to people to something else, right? It's a very, very different concept. So that's where the Network First Manifesto is even like the, in a way, the pewter version of that, or the wider version of that, where we say, look, this is not even incorporated as an initiative or as a foundation. This is genuinely a group of people, 500 members that come together, and we are exploring how we can create systems, tools, and frameworks that amplify human connection and collaborative freedom. ONA might be one of those tools. There are many others that might be relevant. But, you know, this is not about we are trying to launch an exit, complete an exit with a partner. We are not trying to hit X revenue. Of course, we are going to explore monetization as part of that process, but it looks more in the regard of, can somebody launch an initiative as part of the Network First Manifesto community and actually make a living out of it, versus you're joining this community and you're going to be charged $300 upfront, right, without even knowing what you're doing here, right? So,
right.
I feel like CTS and the Network First Manifesto are like two sides of the same coin at different levels of progress. And then there is there's another thing I like to call the Trojan horse approach, which is like, you know, we go at CTS and other than actually working with Fortune 500 companies that are very well known in the industry, as well as building the native ONA capabilities for companies like Google, ServiceNow, and now in the process of doing that with other mainstream vendors. Every time that we bring this technology to a partner, to an organization, we're bringing the philosophy of work network first with it. So the goal is here, you're not only mapping how employees interact with each other because you want to understand who's the high potential for a leadership development program. You're introducing a new philosophy where your value as a member of the community is not defined necessarily by your role or level of experience or academic background, but is defined by the, you know, how you inspire others, how you provide personal support, how you share information. And it's the combination of that human and social capital that makes a difference. So, you know, I have some next steps down the road that I will be happy to discuss with you. But that's how basically how those two initiatives are connected, if that makes sense.
Right. So what, in terms of like the long-term vision for these two initiatives and their role in shaping the future of work, collaboration, yeah, and governance, what's your vision over the long term for that?
So my vision, first of all, there are three specific areas where I would like this network-first approach to make an impact. The first one is in a traditional corporate environment, right? Imagine you have an employee in a Fortune 500 company, and that employee happens to be very demotivated. Maybe it's working on something that doesn't fulfill him or her, or maybe, you know, doesn't have the best relationship with the boss, or, you know, it's just burned out because of working too many hours overtime, or, you know, go figure out, like, traditional situation, right? But now imagine that you have actually the ability to submit a proposal to work on something within the context of your company, something that you really would be passionate about. It will really give you that level of enthusiasm that you are looking for. But the thing is, like, it's not necessarily based on approval from your manager. If you get enough support from other peers in the organization, you are able to dedicate, say, for example, between 25% to 50% of your time working in a network-first zone within the organization, where you can then combine, again, centralization and decentralization. You can spend time working on something you're passionate about together with people in the organization and combine that with what the company needs you to do from an operational perspective at any given time. That combination of those two approaches can make a significant difference in engagement. There are some companies like Google that explore the 20% innovation time, right? Which in practice, it ended up, they call it like 120% because you were supposed to do it outside of working hours. But it is different, you see, because it's like, first, it's completely voluntary. Second, it has a component of community. And it's about how we find the right balance between centralization and decentralization, having the stability of having a fixed salary, but also being able to work as an entrepreneur or intrapreneur within the company. So that's the first area where I would like this to be implemented. The second one, very important to me personally, and also based on my experience with Silicon Valley, is to redefine what entrepreneurship means and what it means to launch a startup, right? Right now, especially in Silicon Valley, the traditional framework is you have a friends, family, and fools round, like they call it, right? Then you got angel investment or join an accelerator. Then basically you try to get VC money and as much as possible, as soon as possible. And then basically you go into this setup where you try to demonstrate to the investors that you can generate revenue as soon, as fast as possible before you lose control of the company or because you are, but again, the challenge here is that based on this framework, you are not giving enough time to create a community that can create a feedback loop and that can help you achieve product market fit So when you get the money, you are still in the experimentation phase versus exploitation, right? So here the reason is how we can make it easier with a network first approach for someone that launches an initiative. Doesn't matter if it's launching a podcast, launching a startup, launching an agency, whatever, right? How can we make it easier for that person to already from the get-go have a community of people that resonate with that idea that can, again, provide feedback, become ambassadors, sometimes become investors. Why not, right? But it's from the point of view of starting as a community. Still there is a founder, still there is a person with a vision, but it's not starting in isolation. And then by the time that you decide to get this investment, you make sure that you have something that has been already validated in a way by a community rather than just having just one person thinking that this might work or not. And I think that this is very, very important. I've done entrepreneurship in many parts of the world, Tokyo, Singapore, Europe, Silicon Valley. Here in Silicon Valley, there is a very strong supportive ecosystem for entrepreneurs. But still, like 90% of founders, they are not able to materialize the vision that they have in the way they had it in their head, because it becomes something else as the company grows, becomes something that is less pure and less about doing a positive impact in the world, more about just driving profit as fast as possible, right? So that's the second area where I think this could be a big impact. Could make a big impact. And the third area is for those groups, mostly in the blockchain, crypto space, that have already been trying to work in a decentralized manner for years, sometimes in a more successful and more often in a unsuccessful way, you know, to use this as a framework so they can organize themselves better and you know, kind of like achieve more sophisticated outcomes versus just, you know, just growing and dying, you know, in the moment that they founder leaves or there's something that, you know, doesn't go as they expect. So those are the three areas really. And again, that might look in a way where we develop a platform, like a new type of Slack for decentralized work that kind of like help this done. Because right now we are doing this with a Frankenstein approach. We're using Slack, which has many issues for many users, especially like older users. We are using Google Forms, we are using Snapshot and PB for blockchain, we are using our own CTS technology for network analytics. We've got like four or five different elements from four or five different tools that could be integrated in a single platform, right? So that's my vision for it. But ultimately as well is, you know, I need to feel that I am putting my energy on something that feels meaningful and authentic. And I'm getting that from CTS, but I'm getting that a lot from the Network First Manifesto because it's just beautiful. And you felt it. You felt it, right? I mean, like you go into a project and you feel that there's a person there that is passionate about what they do, that people go with good intention, and that creating network effects around that energy is just beautiful and fulfilling.
Absolutely. And the people who are involved are very interesting people. You might even pay to talk to them because they're interesting and they're going to fill your brain with... pack your brain with really useful information. And this is the thing, right? Like I look at it in a way of a self-development way, right? And actually the more good people that you spend time with, the better. And whether those people are online, face to face, it doesn't actually make any difference. As long as you're packing your brain support, positive information, and like a can-do attitude, all these people are helping you to just fill up your container there, right? With resources that are valuable. And actually, you have a community, you can ask questions and you can launch these projects. I think it's a great idea. And that's why I joined. I think it's a fantastic idea. Yeah. And I just want to thank you for your time and all this information. It's been amazing. And if you're watching this, and you're like, what the hell is Network First Manifesto? Then you should check it out. I'll pop a link somewhere so you can go and check that out, or you can go find it on YouTube, on LinkedIn, and join. You know, because it's really interesting and worthwhile. So thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.